My name is Jim. Hopefully you were handed a bulletin when you came upstairs or inside. And inside of it, you'll see a blue sheet of paper like this, and that will be your sermon outline, and hope that you are able to follow along. If you have a Bible, I encourage you to go to Deuteronomy. We're going to start in chapter 9 as we make our way through this journey. And we're looking at the one journey of the people of God, how they went from the wilderness into the promised land. And they are right here at this pivotal point, and Moses is giving them a set of instructions and reminders and encouragements and warnings as they are about to go into something that's been in the making for hundreds of years. And they are excited about it, but they need guidance. And we too find ourselves heading into a new chapter in the life of our church, and maybe you find yourself heading into a new chapter of your own personal life or your family life. And it's always good to get instruction and guidance as we start moving forward and heading into something new. And the Bible gives us those good words of God. So as we start, let me ask you a question. Do you ever have any problems that persist? Just problems that continue to stay around in your life? Do you ever have any computer problems that no matter what you try to do, they are always there? Why is that thing always popping up? Why is it always running so slow? Does anybody ever have any bodily problems? And you can ask those same questions. Why is that thing popping up? Why is that running so slow? I mean, it just feels like that we are full of problems. We do have some problems that come and go very quickly. But the ones that we focus on, the ones that get our attention, are the ones that remain with us for a long time. They persist in our lives. And maybe the problem isn't something that you can't take care of. It's something that you know you should be able to handle, but you just can't. Does anybody have any kind of food addictions? Now, I know I shouldn't have that seventh brownie, but man, it just looks so lonely to be the last one after I ate the first six. So let me just go ahead and finish it off. I mean, is there any other kind of temptations that we fall into, nervous tics that we have, things that aren't just necessarily sinful, but man, they irk us. They bother us. I'm becoming increasingly aware how I sound like a Valley's 90 girls, how often I say like. I like this, I like that, and I really don't like it, just in between like words that I'll like say words, because I'm not sure exactly what I'm thinking, so I just fill it in with like or or something. And that is very frustrating, and I don't like it about myself. Maybe you have some sort of like a smoking addiction or a screen addiction or something that's going on where you're like, I want to stop this, but I just feel like I can't. And then we look to different methods to try to improve and get a handle on these things. So I'll put time limits on my screen. I'll set my phone away from my bed. I'll bury it in some place that I have to go a long way to get it. And I actually do go a long way to get it. I'll put gloves on my hands so I don't have to bite my fingernails. I'm going to keep the cigarettes in the car. And now I'm just living in my car. Like whatever it is, we try all of these things to try to manage the problems. And a lot of times we try strategies, we get tips, we're watching YouTube videos, we're asking people for help. We're doing this like, I'll pay you a dollar every time I don't do this or I do this. And you're like, hey, I want to be that guy's friend because I'm going to get rich. We try all of these different strategies on the outside where the reality is that we need to change something on the inside. And as much as we try to change some of the things about ourselves, often we can't. We need to have a heart change, not just an attitude change. And this is very challenging, if not impossible, for us to do. There is good news that all things are possible with God, that He can bring about this transformation, this change within us. And that's what we're going to look at today. We're going to look at a passage of warning where the Israelites needed to make a heart change based on some of the things that they've done in the past with the fear that they'll repeat them going into the future. So let's look at Deuteronomy. We're going to look at chapter 9, verse 1. Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over the Jordan today to go in to dispose nations greater and mightier than you, cities great and fortified up to the heaven, a people great and tall, the sons of Anakim, whom you know and of whom you have heard it said, who can stand before the sons of Anak? Therefore, know today that he who goes over before you as a consuming fire is the Lord your God. He will destroy them and subdue them before you. So you shall drive them out and make them perish quickly as the Lord has promised you. Again, Moses is reminding them, hey, we're here for a reason. God has given us this land. He has promised that we can live in this land. We have to go in and defeat the people that are there and drive them out. And yes, they're bigger. Yes, they're giants. Who can stand before the sons of Anak? Not you on your own, but the Lord has promised victory. The Lord has promised to do the battle. He has promised that the outcome will come according to what he has done. We have to have faith and walk in his promises. So Moses is calling them again to go forward and to occupy the land on the other side of the Jordan. Let's look here in verse 4. Do not say in your heart, after the Lord your God has thrust them out before you, it is because of my righteousness that the Lord has brought me in to possess this land, whereas it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is driving them out before you. Not because of your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart are you going in to possess the land, their land, but because of the wickedness of these nations, the Lord your God is driving them out from before you. And that he may confirm the word that the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Know therefore that the Lord your God is not giving you this good land to possess because of your righteousness, for you are a stubborn people. Victory is assured, it's guaranteed, God has promised it, and he will do what is necessary to bring it to pass. And as he looks forward to the day of victory when they occupy that land and they go forward, he realizes there's going to be a temptation in their mind to think, you know, the reason that we got this is because we are so great. It's because of our righteousness, our goodness, that we have this land. And Moses is giving a big warning here. So do not say in your heart, after the Lord has thrust them out before you, it's because of my righteousness that the Lord has brought me in to possess this land. They're not going to possess the land because of their righteousness. That is not why they are going to conquer. The wickedness of the nations there is what the Lord is doing to bring judgment upon the people, and he is driving them out. He's just graciously using Israel as the tool to drive them out, and then also to say, now that they're out, this will be your land. But they did not earn it. It's not their righteousness. It's not that they were good enough to do what needed to be done. And we see that Moses gives Israel this warning because there is a temptation to think too highly of themselves, to think that they are good and right in what they have done. And it's a really easy thing to do, isn't it? They've become self-deceived. And we want to make sure that we don't fall into that pit. It's easy but dangerous to fall into the trap of self-deception, especially when that pit and that trap is for you to think better of yourselves than you actually are. And this is something that we need to know of today, because it feels like increasingly the message from lots of different places is that you are good enough as you are. You don't need to make any changes or adjustments. And the problems that you have with people in your life is not because of your fault, but it's because of their fault with you. So you don't change, you do you, and let them make the necessary adjustments. Now, obviously, there's a little bit of faulty language there, logic there, because if I'm saying that and the other person's saying that and we're both looking at the other saying, the problem's not me, the problem's you, well, you can see how that's going to break down relationships and not allow for any kind of helpful, instructive dialogue or change, which, you know, don't we see that around us? Again and again, we hear this message. You are good enough. You're fine the way that you are. And anybody that has that problem, they just don't know the real you. They don't see you for how you are. Now, the best of lies are the ones that are mixed with a little bit of truth. And those are the ones that we listen to most readily, and that's how we become self-deceived. We start believing these half-truths, these lies. And that's just a really dangerous place. And at the root of all of this is pride. It's pride in ourselves because we don't want to be told that we're wrong. We don't want to be wrong. So we'll defend ourselves and our actions and our thoughts and our desires that we're right. And then we just stick to it. And that usually doesn't work out very well for us. There's only one person who's right all the time, and it's the Lord. And interestingly enough, the Bible never describes him as being full of pride. It talks about him being a humble God. So what do we need to do? How do we avoid this self-deception where we start to think of ourselves more highly than we should? Well, we need to make sure that we listen to the truth and we get the feedback so that we can see how reality really is. The problem with that is that we all have distorted views of reality. We all have experience and thoughts and desires and preferences, and it shades the way that we think about things. And that's why we have arguments, because in our hearts we believe that we are right, and we're arguing with somebody else who believes that they're right. And it's about the stupidest thing. It's always about the, well, I mean, not always, but a lot of times it's about the stupidest thing. I'm telling you, the first car we had was blue. No, I'm telling you, it's green. I'm looking at that. My wife and I had a conversation, I think, with our family a while ago with an old van we had, whether the color was blue or green. And this was a long discussion for 5-10 minutes about, no, let's do that. And somebody's getting out like the pallet wheel and like, look at this shade, whatever. We have different experiences, different perspectives, and we're right. We know we're right. So we deceive ourselves. And the only way to get out of that self-deception is to listen to other people and consider their point of views. But because we all have a little bit of shade one way or the other, we need to listen to God's word the most. Because he is the only one that is not biased. He is the only one that sees everything from all angles at all times. Not only does he see things with his eyes that we see, he sees things that we cannot see, like the inner workings of our hearts. So he knows the thoughts, the inclinations, and the motivations of people. So we need to listen to him and consider what he says so that we can see reality for what it is and not be deceived. The clearest way to hear God and his word is through the Bible, is to read the scriptures again and again. And the Bible is talked about as many different ways, and one of the ways that James talks about it is as a mirror, is that you come to the Bible to see the mirror, to see the reality of how things are. When you get up in the morning and you want to see how you are, you look in the mirror. You don't look at a picture that was taken 5-10 years ago. You don't even look at a picture that was taken, oh, this is my selfie, how did I look yesterday? Okay, I'm good to go now. No, you want to see how things are in the moment. You want to see accurately. You want to see something that's telling you the truth about yourself and about the world around us. And this is what God provides in his word, is that it has no error. It's completely sufficient. It tells us everything that we need to know. And it is the word of God. So I encourage you, don't be deceived. Don't be self-deceived. But listen to God again and again and again in his word. So that those areas where like, I have no idea what's going on, or I'm sure about this. And then we can read from the word, and God's eternal perspective will set us straight as he tells us what reality is. It's interesting in verse 4, it says, do not say in your heart. Don't say to yourself, or don't listen to yourself. How often do we get in trouble because we listen to ourselves instead of listening to other wiser people, especially God? This phrase, say in your heart, Moses uses this a couple times beforehand. This is the third time he uses it. The first time is in chapter 7, verse 17. It says, if you say in your heart, these nations are greater than I, how can I dispose them? Okay, so the first time, if you say in your heart, they're too big, they're too overwhelming. Well, what do you need to do there? Well, when you say in your heart, the solution to this is to remember, is to listen to what God has said. Because this first time, if these nations are greater, how can I dispose of them? It continued on, you shall not be afraid of them, but you shall remember what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and all of Egypt. In chapter 8, he says something similar. Verse 17, again, beware lest you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth. So the first time, the problem is, look, I can't overcome these enemies. And it's one of insecurity. And he's like, remember the Lord. He's the one that's going to win the battle. And then after the battle, then they come in and they might think, okay, well, you know what? The reason that we have this is because the power of my might and my hand. That's why I'm rich, because I have done all this. And isn't this just how humans are? Like, we go from insecurity to pride very quickly. I don't know if I can do this. And somehow you get through it and you're like, I'm the best. Amazing. What was I even worried about? What was I thinking? This was no problem at all. And then you see the next problem. Uh-oh. I can't do that. And somehow you make it through. 2-0. My goodness. This is great. I mean, we just seem to oscillate back and forth between tremendous fear and insecurity to pride that we think that we're God. And both of those are not helpful or healthy. And the remedy both time is to remember. Remember the Lord your God, what he did to the people that were bigger to you. And then remember the Lord, the God. He's the one that gave you the power and the wealth. so that you feel the success that you feel right now. So then again here, when he says, don't say in your heart, what's the solution? What's God going to say? Well, let's start in verse 6 back up, and then we'll see what the solution is in verse 7. Know therefore that the Lord your God is not giving you this good land to possess because of your righteousness, for you are a stubborn people. Remember, and do not forget how you provoked the Lord your God to wrath in the wilderness. From the day you came out of the land of Egypt until you came to this place, you have been rebellious against the Lord. Again, same solution. You need to remember. But this time it's a little bit different what you're supposed to remember. You're supposed to remember how you provoked the Lord and how you've been a difficult people up to this point. And he continues on, and we start little Moses' story hour here in verse 8, a little review of history. Even at Horeb, which is another word for Mount Sinai, you provoked the Lord to wrath, and the Lord was so angry with you that he was ready to destroy you. When I went up the mountain to receive the tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant that the Lord made with you, I remained on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water. And the Lord gave me two tablets of stone with the finger of God, and on them were all the words that the Lord had spoken with you on the mountain out of the midst of the fire on the day of the assembly. And at the end of 40 days and 40 nights, the Lord gave me the two tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant. Then the Lord said to me, arise, go down quickly from here, for your people, whom you have brought from Egypt, have acted corruptly. They have turned aside quickly out of the way that I commanded them. They have made themselves a metal image. You see the picture, what's going on here. At the base of Mount Sinai are the people. Moses has gone up to the mountain and he is in the presence of the Lord. He is having an experience that one day we will experience, for those of us that have trusted Christ, is that we will see God in an unhindered way. And he is so full of the presence of the Lord that it doesn't even make a difference if he's eating or drinking. So he doesn't eat and drink for 40 days, and the Lord sustains him, which shows us where real life comes from, not bread and water, but the presence of the Lord. And he's having this incredible time here, and the Lord's giving him all the instructions of what Israel's to live and how they're supposed to govern themselves and conduct themselves as they go into the promised land. And that's what's happening up top, and Moses and God are having this wonderful time. But down below, the people have turned away quickly. And it's pretty interesting how the Lord says it. Look at verse 12. It says, the Lord said to me, arise, go down quickly. Therefore, your people, Moses, whom you have brought out from Egypt, have acted corruptly. Well, wait a minute. Did Moses really bring them out of Egypt? Well, I mean, he was the leader. He did bring them out of Egypt, but it was the Lord again and again who was the one that rescued them. But here they have turned away, and you can see some of the frustration. I think you get a little peek of the inner workings of God. Moses, your people that you led out, and they've turned away so quickly from following me. Up top, it's amazing. Down below, it's rebellious. It's terrible. And we see it gets even worse. Look in verse 13. Furthermore, the Lord said to me, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stubborn people. Let me alone, that I may destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven, and I will make you a nation mightier and greater than they. So I turned and came down from the mountain, and the mountain was burning with fire. So now Moses is recalling his journey. And the two tablets of the covenant were in my hand, my two hands, and I looked, and behold, you had sinned against the Lord your God. You had made yourselves a golden calf. You had turned aside quickly from the way that the Lord had commanded you. So this is the golden calf episode that's found in Exodus. Starts in like chapter 32 and goes on. This is a little recap, a summary of what happened. Verse 17, so I took hold of the two tablets and threw them out of my two hands and broke them before your eyes. Then I lay prostrate before the Lord as before, 40 days and 40 nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water, because of all the sin that you had committed in doing what was evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. For I was afraid of the anger and hot displeasure that the Lord bore against you, so that he was ready to destroy you. But the Lord listened to me that time also. And the Lord was so angry with Aaron that he was ready to destroy him. And I prayed for Aaron also at that same time. Then I took the sinful thing, the calf that you had made, and burned it with fire and crushed it, grinding it very small until it was as fine as dust. And I threw the dust into the brook that ran down from the mountain. I don't know what was sticking out to you when I was reading through this, and hopefully you're reading along yourself. But when I was reading through it, studying this, I was just like, man, there is a lot of anger going on here. There's a lot of anger from the Lord, and then there's a lot of anger from Moses as well. And we understand the anger of the Lord. The anger of Moses, I can kind of relate with. And this is something for you to discuss later on today, or maybe in your community groups throughout the week. But what kind of anger did Moses have here? Was this righteous anger or unrighteous anger? Because I'm kind of looking through it, and I could make a case for either one. Because I know for myself, I've been a part. I've had unrighteous anger, but I've also had righteous anger. My unrighteous anger, especially in the past, long in the past, would come out that I would hit things. Thankfully, I would not hit people. People are not things. It was always like a wall or a tree or a drywall or something like that. And most of the time, they were okay, but I was not. So my unrighteous anger actually hurt me more than helped the situation. And I could make an argument for Moses here for that. But I've been a part of righteous anger too. I can remember a specific instance downstairs with a youth group one year. This was years ago, where there was some strife and some turmoil between a couple of people, and there was this guy that was making trouble for some people. So I gathered them together in a room, tried to be the peacemaker, work it out, and the guy said something very inappropriate, very threatening to these other students. And I was sitting at the table, and as soon as he said it, I popped out of the table, almost lunged across. It was far away. And I pointed my finger, I said, "You cannot say that here!" It was instinct. And I was upset, and I was mad. Because nobody should be threatening anybody in this place. And as a shepherd, I am not going to allow somebody to come along and threaten the sheep that are under my care. And I was upset because he was putting them in danger. But he was one of my sheep too. And he was putting himself in danger. So I was angry at him because I wanted to protect him. And I don't say that as like a bragging thing. I just think that that's the way that the Lord works sometimes. That there is a righteous anger, and we need to display that righteous anger, because his tone shifted when I did that, to know that I'm serious, and you cannot talk like that while we're here. This is going to be a place of safety and acceptance while we work out our differences, not threaten and overpower to get control. And I wonder, what was Moses doing at this point? Whether his was righteous or unrighteous, we're not sure. You can discuss about it. I got a guess. I'll tell you afterwards if you want to know. But the Lord's anger definitely was righteous. He was upset because these people had not just broken his commandments, but they had turned away from him. Read through the prophets and you see again and again that when people are engaged in idolatry, they're worshiping idols, which is what happens here, God continues to equate it to spiritual adultery. They're cheating on him. They're cheating on him. The God that rescued him, that brought him out of Egypt, that's going to give him this promised land, he's with Moses, their leader, at the top, giving them the good rules that are going to give them the best life, the good guidance that's going to protect them so that they can thrive in this world. And they're down below, cheating on him, worshiping another idol. It's not hard to imagine the frustration that comes when we're betrayed by somebody that we care about and the wound that we feel. And I think that gives me a little bit of a glimpse into what's going on inside of the Lord. He is God, he is perfect, and he has emotions, and he feels sadness and sorrow when his people betray him. And I think you get a little peek of that frustration when he's talking to Moses, your people that you brought out. And you can even get a sense of that. Okay, Moses, let's start over fresh and start with you. And Moses kind of picks up. He gives us a little bit of a more detailed interaction of this conversation that he has with the Lord. Because in verses 22 and 24, there's a little side note here where Moses brings up four other times that the people have been provoking the Lord and not been faithful to him. And then verse 25, he picks up to get a little bit more detailed about this interaction that he has with the Lord. Let's look at it. So I lay prostrate before the Lord for these 40 days and 40 nights, because the Lord had said that he would destroy us, or destroy you. And I prayed to the Lord, O Lord God, do not destroy your people and your heritage, whom you have redeemed through your greatness, whom you have brought out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Do not regard the stubbornness of this people or their wickedness or their sin, lest the land from which you brought us say, because the Lord was not able to bring them into the land that he promised them, and because he hated them, he has brought them out to put them to death in the wilderness. For they are your people and your heritage, whom you brought out by your great power and by your outstretched arm. We get this sneak peek, just a little bit more inside information about the conversation that Moses is having with the Lord. And here, what do we see? We see that Moses is acting as a mediator. He's having a little bit of an intercession. He's going between God and the people who have sinned. And you might get a sense of this where you're like, wait a minute, I thought God was holy and he's perfect and he's loving and forgiving. And here he sounds angry. This is exactly what I hear people talk about from the Old Testament. And here's Moses, the good prophet Moses, talking God off the ledge. And it kind of feels like that a little bit. But when you remember that the Lord is a person and he has feelings and emotions and that he's wounded, and you can tell his frustration here, that he's just working things out with Moses. I don't think that Moses is giving him a counsel, so to speak, as much as that he's reminding God, not that God has ever forgotten, but in this moment he's bringing to the forefront these things about who God is. Look and see again what Moses has talked about. He doesn't talk about the righteousness of the people. He says, no, let's not wipe out clean. Let's not start with me. I wonder if Moses felt tempted. A nation based on me instead of these yahoos that I've been with for the 40 years? That sounds kind of good. Maybe we should do that. But he doesn't. Instead, he brings up some things. He says, okay, God, let's not kill them. Let's keep them alive so that you can be a God who fulfills your promises, the promises that you made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the promises long ago that you've through them you would bless the world, and you would make them as numerous as the stars. So let's not wipe out these people, because you're a God who keeps your promise. You're a God who keeps your promise. And then he's also concerned about the Lord's reputation. What's Egypt's going to hear if you wipe them out? They're going to say that you weren't powerful enough to get into the promised land. And they're going to say that you really never loved these people. You hated them, and that's why you brought them out, so that there'd be no collateral damage when you take them out into the wilderness. But that's not who you are. These are your people. They're your heritage. You have loved them. You have chosen them among all the peoples in the world. You love them because you love them. And you have rescued them. And you want to bless them and help them. So let's not start clean. Let's just stick the course. Let's stay with these people. I mean, what we see here is that Moses is acting like a mediator between sinful people and a holy God. And this should remind us, and it's a little foreshadowing of Jesus. Because the Israelites were sinful people that rebelled against God. They disobeyed him, and they deserved the wrath that God wants to pour out to them. But Moses comes and intervenes, and they're spared, and they're forgiven, and they move forward with the Lord. We are sinful people. That we do not follow the Lord perfectly in all of his ways. And we deserve the judgment of the wrath of God. But Jesus comes and intercedes for us. He came to live the perfect life that we could not live. He died on the cross the death that we deserve, so that he could come back to life, everlasting life, that he would show that he has all power, all control over everything, even over sin and death, that he will give life to anyone who comes to him humbly, confessing their sins and putting their trust and their faith in him. We have guilty people deserving God's wrath, and Jesus came and he stood between them and a holy God, blocking the way, saying, anybody that wants to get behind me, put their faith in me. Anybody that wants to get behind me, I will take the wrath. I will take the punishment. I have taken the punishment. I have absorbed all of the judgment that you should get. Put your faith in me, and let my righteousness become your righteousness. Let my life become your life. Let my holiness become your holiness, if you trust me. Have you done that? Have you come to Jesus humbly and said, I know that I have messed up, and on my own I am not righteous. So I turn to you, Jesus, to be my righteousness. I put my faith in you so that I can be rescued and forgiven. And I can no longer be a slave to sin. But I would not be just a servant. No, no. I would be a family member of the Lord, a son or a daughter, adopted into the family so that, Jesus, you would be my brother. Have you told the Lord that and put your faith in him? If you haven't, then do it. Go to him, cry out for mercy and grace. He loves to answer that prayer. And it's not a matter of what you have done. It's all about what Jesus has done. It's a grace. It's a gift he gives to you. And he asks you to come and ask for it and to receive with humility. Moses had a prayer, and the Lord listened to the prayer, but it didn't change the people. They were able to move forward with the Lord, but they continued on their path. Jesus answers the prayer, and he sends us the Spirit, and we are transformed so that we have a new heart. So we no longer want the things that are bad for us, but a desire for God and his good ways begins to grow in us, and we start to walk in that way. This is why Jesus is the better mediator than Moses, which you could read about in Hebrews. So we see the sneak peek here. And what's going on here? Why is Moses going through another story yet again in Deuteronomy? Deuteronomy feels like just a bunch of rules with a bunch of history. And the reason is that because Moses knows how powerful stories are. Because if we understand where we've come from, it gives us wisdom and insight to where we are, and it shapes the way that we're going in the future. This is why there's such big debate and discussions about people who want to rewrite history in our day. Because there are some that say, look, what we've been told has been pointing us in this direction, and we don't like that direction, so we need to change that direction. And if we can undo the foundation of what that path is on, then people will be more ready to say, like, I don't want to be on that path because these people did this and this and this, and that's all bad, so let me make the adjustment. And then there are other people that are saying, like, no, that's exactly how things went, and even if it was bad, we need to remember it so that we can keep going in the direction. Moses knows that stories are powerful and that history is powerful because it informs us a lot about who we are and the direction that we're heading. And that's why he's telling the Israelites again and again and again their own history that they've lived through to remind them about who they are. It is a sad thing. We're all sad about this. That was a joke because he was crying. Like, we are part of this history, but we need reminding again and again. How often do you forget the things that you say, I'd never forget that. I won't forget that. I was with family yesterday, and I have a family member who's got four kids that are all in elementary school. And she's like, man, I forget the toddler years. I forget the baby years. I was like, that was like 2 years ago for you. I know, I forget. There's so many things that we said, I'm never going to forget this. And yet we do. Which is why we need to be reminded again and again and again of what we need to not forget. And in this instance, what Moses is doing is to remind them that it's not by their righteousness that they're going into the promised land. Because they do not have a stellar track record when it comes to righteousness. Did you hear like how Moses describes the people of Israel during that time? Let me just highlight the words that he describes them. Look at verse 9:6. For you are a stubborn people. That's what the Lord calls them. 9:7, from the day you came out of the land of Egypt until you came to this place, you have been rebellious against the Lord. Even at Horeb, you provoked the Lord to wrath. For your people for whom you have brought from Egypt acted corruptly. 9:13, furthermore, the Lord said to me, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stubborn people. 9:23, you rebelled against the commandment of the Lord your God, and did not believe him or obey his voice. You have not been rebellious against the Lord from the day that I knew you. Or you have been rebellious against the Lord from the day that I knew you. And verse 27, when Moses is interceding with the Lord, do not regard the stubbornness of this people or their wickedness or their sin. Moses is reminding them again and again and again that they are not righteous. In fact, they've displayed quite the opposite. I don't think that he's doing this to shame them or to heap on guilt on them. This is the way that we understand it today. I think that he's telling them the truth as a reminder and as a warning. This is where you've been. This is the direction that you're headed. And when you get into this new land, what's going to change? Why will you not be the description that the Lord has given you in the past? What is going to make the difference? And here's something that we need to do. Here's our point, is that we need to remember. He's calling the Israelites to remember the truth about themselves, and we need to remember the truth about ourselves. And we need to remember accurately. And that can be really challenging, because we have difference of opinions. And as things get farther along, then details fade, and then we get confused about stuff. Was that 3 years ago? 4 years ago? When was that? Let me go look it up. 1990? What the heck? I mean, it just, we don't remember as well as we need to remember. So we need to remember, and we need to invite people to tell us the good news about ourselves as well as the bad news. And we need to listen to the Lord for Him to tell us the good things about us as well as the failures that we have, the mistakes that we've made, and the sinful tendencies that we have. This is exactly what Moses is doing as a warning so that they can wake up and see the reality. Because once we deal with reality, then change is possible. So remember the good, remember the bad so you can acknowledge your need and your dependence upon the Lord and you be humble. And then remember the good so you can remember God's good grace that He's given you more than you deserve. This is what Moses is talking about. You don't deserve this land. It's not because of your righteousness. No. It's because of my grace. It's because I'm a giving God. So I'm giving you something to bless you. Because you're my people. And I love you. So just find ways to remind yourself of the good and bad. Read the Bible. Journal. Ask people. Tell stories. Use Facebook memories. Whatever it is you need to do to jog your memory. So that you can remember the good and the bad of how things actually are. We're going to skip over the first part of chapter 10, because then it's just a summary capping up the episode. Moses goes back up to the mountain. He gets the two new tablets from the Lord of the Ten Commandments, makes the Ark of the Covenant, comes down, and then there's a little travel log. But in verse 12, Moses brings us back to the future when he's actually talking to the Israelites, to the present for them. And it says, "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all His ways, to love Him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the commandments and the statutes of the Lord, which I am commanding you today for your good. Behold, to the Lord your God belong heaven and the heaven of heavens, the earth and all that is in it. Yet the Lord set his heart in love on your fathers and chose their offsprings after them, you above all peoples, as you are this day. Circumcise, therefore, the foreskin of your heart and be no longer stubborn." What does the Lord want from you? Israel, here you are. We've just reviewed this bad track record you have. What does the Lord require of you? Well, He wants you to fear Him, to walk in all His ways, to love Him, to serve Him, to keep His commandments and His statutes. He wants you to trust Him. And to show that you trust Him, not just with an emotion, but with your life and the way you conduct yourself and what you think and feel and how you are. He wants you to completely show your dependence and follow Him. He wants you to walk by faith. And the problem is not just the outward things that they're doing, but it's an inward thing. The rebelliousness, the sinfulness, the wickedness, the stubbornness. These are all heart issues, which is why in verse 16, Moses says, "Circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart and be no longer stubborn." We think about circumcision most of the time when a new male is born. It's a medical procedure. But during that time, it was a symbol. It was a symbol representing the distinction between God's people and pagan people. Because what person in their right mind would go ahead and do that on their own? It's only following the Lord in faith that you would say, "This is how I'm going to show my distinction. It's by faith that I'm going to say, okay, I'll go ahead and do this, God, this weird thing that you ask me to do. Because I trust you. And I'm going to show that I trust you because this is what I'm going to do." And it's not just an outward symbol. It's supposed to be representing a heart issue, which is why Moses connects it with circumcise the foreskin of your heart and be no longer stubborn. He's calling them to recommit themselves at a heart level to God, not to be stubborn, not to be hard-hearted, stiff-necked, but to yield to the Lord, to be humble, to be soft, to allow God to shape and form and mold us into the image of Christ. And this is what we need. We need this heart transformation. And how does it come about? Look at verse 17. For the Lord your God is God of gods and the Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, the awesome God, who is not partial and takes no bribe. He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. Love the sojourner, therefore, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. You shall fear the Lord your God. You shall serve him and hold fast to him, and by his name you shall swear. Verse 21 is a good one. He is your praise. He is your God who has done for you these great and terrifying things that your eyes have seen. Your fathers went down to Egypt 70 persons, and now the Lord your God has made you as numerous as the stars of heavens. How do we do the heart transformation that needs to be done? Well, we can't, which is why I think Moses is telling us not a bunch of things to do, but he starts out with, for the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, the awesome God, who is not partial and takes no bribes. Your works will not bribe God. He is God, he is mighty, he is holy, and he loves you. So the beginning of the transformation is for us just to look at God, to consider him, to love him, to gaze upon him, to be overwhelmed with the might and the awesomeness of who he is. Because they're coming into a place where they're going to think they're good enough, that they're righteous enough. But it's as we look at the Lord and we see his perfection that we realize, we are not close to perfection. But as we see the Lord and we see his bigness and his vast and his might and his power, it makes us feel very small and we should be humbled. But then we remind ourselves that the Lord is also near, that he's close, that he draws to the humble, and that he sent his Son to rescue us. And that when Jesus left, he sent the Spirit to dwell within us when we trust in him. So we have a big, mighty, powerful God that can defeat anything, and yet he's close. He's near. He lives within us. His Spirit is within us when we trust him. And this is how the heart transformation takes place, is that we spend time with God, looking at him, loving him, praising him, worshiping him, enjoying him. And as we have that relationship and we trust him, we follow him, we do what he says, then he begins to transform us so that we become more and more like who he is, which is seen perfectly in Jesus, the God-man. So do you want that heart transformation? Do you want to not be stubborn, to get rid of your pride, to not be wicked or evil? Of course, we all want to be good and clean. It comes by looking at God. It comes by fixing our eyes on Jesus. It comes by knowing him, loving him, worshiping him. Spend some time talking to him. Read the Bible. Sing songs to him. Pray. Encourage each other. Serve. All of these things are ways that we can connect and know God. And we don't just do it once. No, no, this is a continual relationship. How often do you call or text somebody that you really enjoy being around? More than just once a week. This is how we get rid of the stubbornness in our heart, as we come into the presence of the Lord, and he's the one that changes us as we enjoy him continually. And this is what Moses calls us to. Let me encourage you today, put your trust and hope in the Lord. Humble yourself. Recognize that you are not righteous on your own. But because of Jesus, you can have his righteousness. You can enjoy all the benefits of who he is when you put your faith and trust in him. Spend some time with the Lord today. It is the Sabbath. It's good to do. Let me pray. God, we thank you for this day. We thank you that you've called us to a higher standard than we would think about ourselves. And we thank you that you empower us through your Spirit when we trust in Jesus so that we can be who you've designed us to be. We're made in your image, but we're broken and sinful. But when we come to Christ, we can become clean and forgiven, and we can be made whole as well as holy. Encourage us, Spirit. Remind us of the things that we need to not forget. Remind us of your goodness and your grace and your mercy, and that Jesus is enough. And remind us of our own inadequacies, not so that we would beat ourselves up, that we might see the world as it actually is, so that we would run to Jesus, seeing that he loves us and that he rescued us. Let us never think that you were too far, Jesus. We could never come to you on our own, which is why it's such good news that you came to us. And pray, Spirit, that you would imprint these things deep into our heart, and that you would give us courage and boldness so that we can speak to them of other people, so they too can know this good news. They too cannot have a stubborn heart, but that they would have a soft heart, a humble heart, a godly heart. This is a gift that you give to us. So we praise you, and we love you, and we worship you. And we ask this all in your name, Jesus. Amen. Thank you guys for coming.